Well, that's my first introduction to Lenny Molinari, is that version of that band. So 1979, I'm 16 years old. I'm teaching guitar at this little music store in Point Pleasant Beach called Blue Note Music, right on Arnold Avenue, right around the little bend there by Jersey Mike's, the first Jersey Mike's. And this guy comes out. I used to teach on a Saturday. He's kind of, you know, moving his arms, playing air drums. And, you know, whoever was managing the store that day, he said, "Joe, this is Ronnie. Ronnie, this is Joe. He's our, you know, newest, you know, guitar teacher here at the studio, at the store." So, you know, "Hey, man, how you doing?" "I'm Ronnie." "You know, oh, you know." So we're chit-chatting. You know, he says, "How old are you?" I said, "I'm 16. He says, "Ah, it's too bad. You know, I got this new band, you know, we're really good, called Yasker's Farm." I said, "Oh, wow. Well, you know, what are you guys doing?" He told me the whole, you know, the whole spiel. So he said, "Yeah, we're playing tonight over, you know, around the corner at the Silver Dollar."
Oh, I said, "Really? Silver Dollar."
I said, "Okay." I said, "You know what?" I said, "You know, I might be able to get in." I said, let me see what I could do."
Of course you got in.
Yeah, so of course I got in. And there you guys were, 16. So you were like, you know, you were the first guy that I ever saw do that stuff. So, I mean, and it was to see you doing that, it was, you know, like I wanted to throw my guitar away at that point.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Because I was a 16.
Why am I
little,
bothering,
yeah,
right?
Little kid. You know, I thought I was a little hotshot, you know, playing my little Led Zeppelin licks and whatever I was doing. And then there's Lenny, like, you know, he's this god, you know, playing like, oh.
God.
Like, you know, Al Di Meola and all these, you know, great guitar players that, you know, I could only dream about, you know, one day being able to possibly play like that, you know. So it was... it was quite an eye-opening experience, and you know, so this is 1979. So finally, almost 40 years later, Lenny and I finally hook up, and we've become very good friends now. You know, so it's been a wonderful time.
How did that happen? How did you guys meet?
Yeah, let's
hear.
Was that the studio?
Yeah. Okay. I can't tell you how much I think of Joe.
Yeah.
I feel like I've known him all my life. He's just the sweetest, nicest guy, and the best engineer I've ever worked with.
Well, you're too
absolutely
kind, but the feeling is mutual, you know that. So but so you know, Lenny comes up with he has an original band called Jamination. You know, let's talk about those guys.
Oh,
a little
wow
bit.
Okay, I didn't know.
Jamination, that's the present original band that I'm with. Stainless Steel is the leader of the band, and it's really his vision that we're doing. It's really different in that he has lead guitar playing over all the vocals, all over everything. It's almost like a New Orleans kind of second line music, you know?
Right.
At first, I really was against it, you know, but he talked me into doing it, and... you know, there are places where I think it really works, you know, but it's definitely different. And it's a little hard on me because, you know, playing leads constantly gets a little old right away, you know. I mean, his songs are 20 minutes long.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, so some of the jams. I mean,
five minutes into the song, I've said more than I could possibly say.
That's a jamination.
That's the name, yes.
A jamination, that's right. But it's a lot of fun, and... you know, there's a lot of talent in it. The players are great, and the songs are really interesting. And Stan has a totally different, unique way of singing. And, you know, it's fun. It really is a lot of fun.
It's just fun to be in the studio and just coming just creating and just doing it. You know, just coming in here, especially this place, man. This is like the ultimate, like, you know, when you think of a studio, this is what you think of.
Yeah.
A place like this.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know? This is it, man. This is it. This is my favorite place that I've ever recorded in.
Yeah.
And I've recorded in some of the best. But I love coming here. The sound is terrific. The attitude is wonderful.
Yep.
And the Jamination vibe is just great. I mean, it's really a jamming band where we don't really learn the songs ever. He just starts singing. He shows us some ideas for the line that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically the meat of the music, is just maybe a bass line. And then we start playing it and roll the tape, and whatever comes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty
cool. Wild. Yeah, it's really wild.
It's really a challenge for me because, you know, everything is live.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's no overdubs allowed. You know, mistakes, whatever happens, you know, it's all in there. And, you know, there's no real isolation. Everybody's out in the room at the same time. So, you know, for me, from a sonic standpoint, I have to try and make that all blend and make it work, You know, so it's basically a band playing live.
Right.
You know, like they're on the gig. And it's right. It's definitely, you know, a challenge.
Like a podcast.
Yeah.
We're just going. Just rolling.
Yeah. Yes, but it's a podcast with everybody screaming at the same time.
Playing guitars really loud.
Right.
And dueling bassists. That's a good one. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
We got the Volcano on the drums. You know,
Joe Nivola on drums. Joe is an extremely accomplished drummer. His skill level is through the roof. Yeah. I mean, I've never seen drum solos like this guy can play. Yeah. I mean, and I've seen Buddy Rich and none of the modern guys. But I think earliest I go is Ginger Baker, or latest. You know, I love Ginger Baker. But Joe does things that I've never seen anybody do. Left-handed rolls, one-handed rolls, rolls with either hand, doing opposite time signatures at the same time.
Next level shit for sure.
Wow.
Joe's.
How many guys are in the band?
There's four.
Four.
The bass player, we have two bass players. Vinny, you know, I don't know Vinny's last name. Vinny's our newest addition, and we have Jason J-Rock Saltis, who's a multi-instrumentalist.
Mm-hmm.
His main axe is keyboard. He plays keyboard and keyboard bass together.
Oh, okay.
Like nobody I've ever seen. I mean, we use him in Yasker's Farm without a bass player.
Oh, wow.
He can do any. We do a long distance runaround, which is in 5/4 time. The kid plays it and sings it. The drum parts are in 5/4. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Guys
yeah.
playing just the drums have a hard time playing the songs. This guy plays the drums, the bass, the keyboard, and sings it.
Jeez.
I mean, it makes my brain hurt. You know?
Like I said, I've been watching some videos. I see you guys playing Kansas.
Yeah.
Carry On. I'm like, who plays this? And you're listening to it. I'm like, it's perfect. It sounds perfect, man.
That with three pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well,
that
was always the amazing thing about them. You know, when I used to go see them, you know, back in, you know, the 70s and 80s, I mean, they just always sounded like the record. I mean, everybody's parts, they sang their asses off, played their asses off. You know, it was just, you know, like seeing... If they were doing Zeppelin, or if they were doing Yes, or whatever they were doing, I mean, they sounded like those bands.
Yeah, like how do you pull that off? Like, it's a long distance runaround. Like, I wouldn't be able to even like believe it that I'm hearing this somebody playing this who's not Yes. You know what I mean? Like, why would people even try this? And it still sounds amazing.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
But you always had great musicians in your band, though.
Yeah. That was the prerequisite. You know, I always had to play with guys that were as good as I could find, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the old saying is true. You always try to play with the best guys. Try to play with guys that are better than you.
That's right.
You know, and I learned a lot in Salvation. You know, let me back up a little. Don't get me wrong about the Salvation, that it was a pop band and we played what the people wanted to hear. That's true. But the players were magnificent.
Yeah.
You know, they can't take anything away from those guys.
Right,
I learned
a
lot from those guys. Most of them were jazz guys that were really schooled, and I really learned a lot from the players in that band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like a song we used to play, Give Me Three Steps.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I had to sing Give Me Three Steps one more time, I just want to rip my vocal cords out. But as soon as you start playing it, and everybody gets up, goes on the dance floor, and start. That's what everybody wants to hear. You know what I mean? Those are the songs people want to hear, and you got to play them.
Yeah.
You know, and those types of bands.
Now, in the Yasgers, it was the exact opposite. We did not want to do that. And if people got up to dance to us, we would cut the song short and start another song. We wanted them to listen to us.
Right.
And that's what we did. And, you know, I can't say that's the easiest way, because the masses, if you're going to get the biggest chunk of people out there, biggest percentage, doing it that way is not going to work.
Right.
But if you get enough people, a cult following that fills every club, they're real loyal, and they'll follow you anywhere. You know, because the other bands, they walk out, and what was the name of that band? I don't remember.
Right.
You know, but you do what we did, and they know who you are.
Unforgettable.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, back in the day, that was a thing, wasn't it? I mean, there was a scene. There was you guys. You know, you did your thing, and there was White Tiger, and they did their thing, and there was Salty Dog, and they did their thing, and there was Crystal Ship, and they did. But, you know, it worked, you know. I mean,
there's
always somewhere to go, you know, listen to good music and see really good players. And, you know, unfortunately, it's probably will never be like that again, you know.
What a shame
yeah,
that is.
It is
we
a
could
shame.
Talk a whole 2 days on that and how terrible what they did to that scene is.
Yeah.
You know, they destroyed an industry.
Yeah, well, the whole, you know, changing the drinking age and, you know. The
drunk driving.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, you know, you have to be, you know, cognizant of that, you know, and you can't have people going out and, you know.
You can't, but you got Uber nowadays.
Yeah. So, yeah. And you know,
that's helpful. Know,
you know, regarding the drunk driving thing, I found this interesting. I read in the papers about a year ago that three or four of the biggest colleges did a study on drunk driving. And what they found was average college kids on a Friday night have about $10 in their pocket. So $10, they go to a club, $5 to get in, $5 for a drink. How drunk did they get? Same kids, $10 in their pocket, five guys, $50 worth of vodka, go sit in the van, drink $50 worth of vodka.
Right.
Much worse.
Much worse.
You know, so it's not true to an extent about the bars contributing to these club car accidents and stuff. You know, they had to do a lot more. It was just a witch hunt. They took the first thing they could, you know, clubs are always evil.
Yeah.
You know, taverns going all the way back to the 1800s, you know, the women with the signs and, you know, drinking's bad and stuff. So they did a number on that. And I don't know that they achieved that much. I mean, if you're going to, then the drinking age, 21. Well, if you save lives 21, let's make it 31.
Yeah.
41. Right. Let's save so many. And then the thing is, a kid goes to Iraq, comes back with one leg, he can't have a drink.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, what's that about?
It's ridiculous.
Right. Come on. That's
ridiculous.
He can vote, but he can't drink.
Not enough people care enough. Like, the club owners could never get together and unite to make a serious argument against the opposing people. They just weren't united, you know. Not that they'd have much power anyway against mothers against drunk driving, but but at least they could have made some effort that might have salvaged or made everybody see this in a different light.
Yeah,
obviously you want to save lives. Nobody wants to have their child, God forbid, die in a car accident. But make sure you get the right culprit.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't think they did.
I see a lot of clubs, too, now have like a shuttle. Bar A's got one. They'll come pick you up.
Perfect.
And I mean, that's a good idea.
Especially in the summertime. Sure. You know,
shuttle, and you said, as you said, Uber. I mean, you know, there's ways to get around it.
Well, maybe we should open up a club and try and bring it back.
Yeah, have a shuttle service. Just buy a lot of cars.
Have Yasser's Farm and Dark Horse there every week.
And White Tiger.
And White Tiger.
You know what the trouble with all that would be is that you probably, live bands are, right now, rock and roll is just not about live bands.
Yeah.
It's in the clubs, it's all about dancing and, you know, the DJ and the music that they're covering is not about accomplishment or the quality of the music. It's more about what they see in the video.
Yeah.
You know, my opinion, when I first saw MTV, I said, this is bad for rock and roll.
Yeah.
And everybody, why? I think it's cool. I said, you know why? Because it's going to kill the touring bands. You get a big hit video. How are you going to replicate that?
Yeah.
In a club or anywhere, you know, guy standing in water up to here with raining on him while he's singing. You can't replicate. And the problem is they're not selling the content of the song. They're selling the image of it.
Right.
The video of it is what was most important. So reproducing it live.
Well, that was really the beginning. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Go ahead.
You know, that was really kind of the beginning of the end.
That's
of the music business as we know it.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
everything has changed so drastically. You know, so
MTV,
we could, you know, like you said, spend another 2 days just talking about how music has changed and, you know, how, you know, nobody's buying records and people aren't going to see bands. And if you do go out, you know, you want to go see the Stones this year. I mean, how much? I mean, you take out a second mortgage.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know,
much.
I mean,
it's
insane.
It is.
You know,
we lived through the golden age.
Yeah, we were lucky.
You know, God bless that we at least experienced it, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I don't see it ever going back to where the quality of the musicians and the writers have control anymore.
No.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, music is so disposable. I mean, you know, producers, you know, all they do is, you know, they try and find a pretty girl and they give her a song and, you know, they put it out and see if it sticks. If it sticks, okay, let's try it. If not, on to the next thing and, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, and same thing, you know, what I do. You know, I mean, I really believe in my heart of hearts, you know, the next generation coming up, they're not even going to know what a Pultec equalizer is, let alone how to turn it on and how to make it, you know, get some kind of, sound out of it. You know, it's just, right, you know, everybody is so computer based, and, you know, you have to be, obviously, in 2019, but, you know, there is a lost art in what you do as a guitar player, and I think what I do as an engineer, and, you know, what we all try and do, because we're, you know, we grew up in an analog world, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I wouldn't say unfortunately, but, I mean, it's unfortunate now where we're at, but I don't know.
That's a question I've been asking in the podcast is, do you think rock is dead? And it seems like it's definitely on some sort of life support.
Well, what rock? You know, where do you hear rock? Right. Unless it's old.
But who are these people going out to these shows? It's like, you know, I go see these rock bands, and it's, you know, it's a bunch of middle-aged people going to these shows.
That's all it is.
And how long is that going to last for?
That's right. That's where they go. Right.
It's kind of sad, but it's nice, you know, that there's still people trying to keep it alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, that I'm doing, you know, with Yaskers Farm. You know, the thing about Yaskers is that all the music we play, you know how you said, how many times could I play this song or that song? Yeah. The songs that we play are true classics, and true classics never get old.
True.
I'll play Comfortably Numb every night till the day I die and love it. About every song we play.
I'll still get goosebumps when I hear the guitar solos too. Every time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that, you know, I was really lucky in finding that that way of being able to play that kind of music and market it, you know.
And make a living at it, you know. I mean, that's, you know, nowadays it's very rare, you know. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, you were very blessed for sure.
Oh, thanks.
Absolutely.
Lucky, I think. Blessed is nice to hear.
It's good to be blessed.
We'll take it, right? You got any gigs coming up?
Yeah, we still play. You know, I'm 74 years old now. Okay. So I really can't play 2 days in a row. I mean, I can, but I suffer.
Right.
You know, I have some back problems. And the funny thing about the back is my back issue is it only hurts when I play.
Ah. It's the guitar hanging on your
problem. Yeah, it's the guitar, exactly. So I can't work 2 nights in a row. So we work like once a week here in the studio. Every other Wednesday I do a duo. And once or twice a month I play a club on the weekends.
Okay.
And in the summer we do quite a few of these concerts in the towns, you know, these towns outdoor concerts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have quite a few of those coming up this summer, especially it being the 50th anniversary of Woodstock.
Woodstock, right.
Yeah, a lot of people are looking for the band.
Are you going to be doing any kind of special dates for Yaskers, like any 40th year anniversary things?
Well, you know, I wanted to put the original band back together, the entire original band, and one guy just, he won't do it. He wants to be remembered like he was. I said, man, you're not Joe DiMaggio, you know. He ain't got the beat, you know. Because that'd be perfect, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm still working on him. If I could get him to do it, we have, because I only have confidence that we could bring a lot of people if that's the draw, is that's the original lineup.
Right.
You know. Because then we could play the pony, we could play theaters then.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if we, you know, go on the radio, I could, that commercial would still work, I'm sure, you know, where I could edit it a little bit here and there to make it be more up to date.
Would they know who Cheech and Chong is nowadays?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Who knows? But our, you know, we wouldn't be bringing kids. We'd still be bringing our people, you know?
You're right.
You know, we're still about, like, if you get us a venue that's friendly to our age people regarding age, I mean, regarding time of the day and day of the week.
Right.
And you get that word out to all the people, we will pack anywhere.
I believe that
boat around Manhattan, I mean, you know, it held like 500 people. There were lines of people waiting on the shore while the boat was gone.
Yeah.
One year we were playing, the police boat came alongside us. There was so much marijuana. You would have thought it was Cheech and Chong's boat. And they come on the horn. You got to put that marijuana out or we're going to bring you into port. And the smoke is pouring out of the boat. You know?
That's awesome.
Isn't that funny?
Like when they got out of the truck and what is it, Up in Smoke?
Yeah,
what was
the
first movie they did? Is it Up in Smoke?
Oh, yeah. I think it was Up in Smoke.
Or Spicoli rolling out of the van with his buddies.
Yeah. funny.
Yeah.
Did you go to Woodstock?
No, I didn't.
No.
That week, I was, this funny story, not funny, but interesting. We, Barry Wolf, that manager, rented us a loft on Grand Street in Manhattan for a month. And that loft was in a four-story building. And the floor below us was the Woodstock headquarters. Okay. The floor above us was a brand new rehearsal studio.
Right.
We got very friendly with the Woodstock people, and we could have played Woodstock.
Really?
We didn't have enough material. This is when I was just putting Sue together. That's where we put it together on that, in that loft.
Wow. Oh, wow.
But upstairs, it was called Baggy Studios. Nobody knew about it. It was brand new.
Yeah.
And all the best bands from England went there before they played The Garden.
Really?
And they didn't have air conditioning yet. It wasn't installed yet. Yeah. So they have the doors open, and we had, there was a fire escape from our floor to theirs.
Ah.
And we'd sit out on the fire escape from here to that window, and I'd watch everybody that you could imagine that played The Garden. I saw them rehearsing there and talking the arrangements over, and they never told us to get lost or anything.
Oh, you know? That's so cool.
Yeah.
Did you ever get to meet Jimmy?
No, Jimmy. Yeah. Jimmy was already he wasn't dead yet.
No.
But Jimmy, I saw many times at the Scene.
Right.
I was welcome. We used to play the Scene in Manhattan with the Donuts. That was the name of that New York band, the Donuts.
The Donuts,
believe it or not, which was exactly the opposite of what we were. The blackest sounding R&B band.
Wow.
That guy with the great singer.
Oh yeah.
Oh. Anyway, because we played the Scene, I could get in, go through that red velvet rope anytime I wanted, and Jimmy was there almost every night with his car parked out front. That was the exact car that I owned, a 67 427 blue Corvette.
Nice.
Wow.
Exactly the same interior, same side pipes, everything. It's my car. I thought, wow, that's true. And he'd be in there with a different beautiful girl hanging on his arm every night. And he never played the guitar, but I saw him get up and play the bass a couple of times. And my God, he played the baddest, coolest grooves.
Really?
Oh, to die for. I mean, you could have made a tremendous song out of just what he started playing.
Wow.
And he just get up there and go, dum, bam, bum, dum, 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 bop, boom, dum, dig, dum, boom. Oh, shit. This thing is smoking. You know?
He was a funky mug, huh?
Oh, he was fantastic. God.
You know, when you think about those cats, I mean, how old was he when he passed? 27?
Yeah.
I mean, what they achieved in such a short amount of time, you know? Something popped up and I saw the other day that, you know, George Harrison, he was 24 when they did Peppers. I mean, 24.
Wow.
You know, like, what was I doing when I was 24? Oh, yeah.
Wow.
You know, so you think about, you know, all the great bands and what they achieved in a, you know, in such a short amount of time. It's, you know, it's like, wow, why do we even bother? You know, it's like, what would something was in the water back then.
That's 63 to 70.
Yeah.
Those years were from the Beatles on.
Yeah. Well, that was the birth of, you know, what I loved and, you know, and still love and, you know, for the studio part of it, you know, I mean, that was the sound, you know, Beatles and Stones and The Who and Zeppelin and Deep Purple. And I mean, it was just the sound,
You
know, with those bands, you know,
they were all the skill level was all so high.
And
they were so accomplished in their writing and the record companies did not squeeze their time.
That's right.
You know, if you they wanted to write a 20-minute song, you wrote a 20-minute song, record companies were in it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think they knew at some point that, you know, people were going to buy the records.
The albums, the Beatles started that with, if you want to get this particular song, you could only get it on an album.
Yeah.
And I was pretty smart, Albums became the thing then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't just a single.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Bohemian Rhapsody yet?
I haven't seen it.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was a good movie.
He's trying to push, you know, he wants the Bohemian Rhapsody to be the single.
Yeah.
He's going, that can't be the single. Yeah, what are you, crazy? Right. Was it seven minute song? Yeah. No way.
But that was already, you know, much later into the 70s, so I'm surprised that they were giving him such a hard time about it.
And they put it on the B-side, and he's like, He's like, oh, he's looking at the Somebody to Love. He goes, no, it's the B-side. Play the B-side. He's telling the guy, the DJ, play it on, play the B-side. Play that one.
Yeah, I remember the first time I heard that. I was floored. I was in Salvation. I was going to a gig, and when I got to the gig, I couldn't stop talking about this song I heard. You know,
and that guitar sound.
Oh, my God. What a sound.
Brian May, the governor.
Oh, that mid-range, how sweet it is, and so perfect, that mid-sound he has.
Yeah.
I, you know, I often wondered how much that guitar has to do with it. I guess a whole lot, you know.
Yeah, the pickups, you know, are definitely part of it.
And he made it, right? Yeah. He and his dad made the guitar.
But those Burns pickups, you know, they definitely, you know, are a big part of that tone. And, of course, the AC-30, you know, so chimey and sparkly, you know.
Beautiful sound. What a combination. Yeah. God bless that he found that, man. What a contribution to rock and roll.
That's about the movie, too. It's like, you know.
Did I mention
Freddie's
that?
Like, you need me. Well, it really turned out that they really needed each other.
Yeah,
you know, that's what
sure.
it comes down to. You know, he thought he was, you know, once he started going solo, he's like, oh, you know, you guys need me. I don't need you. Well, guess what? That's the one thing he was wrong about.
Yeah.
All the great bands, though, right? I mean, you know. They were all like that.
Yeah.
I mean, even when the Beatles broke up, I mean, obviously, I mean, they all had such great solo albums and careers, but, you know, still wasn't the same.
It wasn't the same. Yeah, the magic is gone.
Yeah. You know. As much as McCartney, you know, I mean, he was so successful.
Oh, yeah. Even Lennon and you know.
Yeah, it was just...
All four of them, really.
Well, yeah, that was just that combination, the right place, right time.
Oh,
you know,
that.
And, yeah.
The Beatles combination is from another planet, man.
Yeah. I mean, Abbey Road for me is the epitome. You know,
unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
You know, somebody I just heard on the radio somebody say that there's this guy wrote a book about being the only man on earth that ever heard the Beatles. Yeah. And he woke up one day. And nobody, so he started writing these songs. Like he was the writer, but nobody ever heard them.
Wow.
So he had a hit after hit.
Interesting.
It's an interesting concept.
It is.
Could you imagine? Oh, I just wrote, I Want to Hold Your Hand. It took 5 minutes.
Maybe that was Paul McCartney. Maybe he is that guy. Because how did he write all these songs?
I am the walrus,
man?
Yeah.
I
mean,
I buried Paul.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing.
Yeah, good shit.
You know, I had a bunch of funny stories I could have told. I don't know how long this thing is supposed to go.
Tell us one.
I'll tell you one that I think is pretty interesting. I also did a Santana tribute band.
Okay.
You know, because people kept saying I look so much like him. I don't really play like him. Mm-hmm. But because I look like him so much, I thought, you know, there's a lot of money in tribute bands. And this is something I could do with my band, add a couple of pieces. And it won't get in the way of Yasker's Farm, mm-hmm. but it can give us some cool gigs, you know?
Sure.
So sure enough, we get a gig at the Trump Marina, Atlantic City. It's an afternoon gig. It's outside in the middle of the summer, hot day. And we're on stage getting ready to go on. And like I said, it was really hot. People are a little impatient. And the MC comes up and he says, people were waiting for a special guest to come down and announce the band. So I thought, oh, okay, well, we're going to wait. So we're waiting, and it's hot, and everybody's getting more impatient, you know. Finally, this guy shows up. Who is it? I didn't even know who this guy was at the time. It was Flavor Flav, you know, with the big clock and shit.
Yeah, boy!
So he comes out of the audience, strutting up there, you know, stoned out of his mind. He's like, bucks up. And the MC says, and here's Flavor Flav to announce the Santana band. He turns around and he looks at me and he thinks, I'm Carlos Santana.
Right.
He runs up on a stage and he starts doing this to me. You know, oh my God, I love you. I love this guy my whole life. And everybody in the audience knows.
You're not Santana.
That I'm not Santana. And he grabs me and he hugs me. He's kissing in my ear while he's spitting on me. And I'm going, I'm not Santana. I'm Lenny Miner. He's going, I want to make records with you, man. I love you. Tell me if this Santana's here. Are you kidding me? And I was so embarrassed and laughing at the same. I didn't know what to feel. It was such mixed emotions. And he stayed there the whole set and kept doing, getting on his knees after every song. And
at what point did he realize that? You know,
never.
Still hasn't realized it.
At the end of the set, he leaves finally, and two of his guys come down and say, Flavor Flav wants you to come up and do some Coke and champagne. I said, do me a favor. Tell Flavor Flav my name is Lenny Molinari and I ain't Carlos. He says, we're not telling him.
That's classic.
No, I didn't go up there. I didn't. What could I say to him when I went up there? He probably still wouldn't believe me. But you know, on the other end, that's what I sold to agents, that this guy was right in my face and still thought I was Santana.
Right.
You know?
That's awesome.
That's Flavor Flav for you.
Yeah.
Could have got a nice glass of Cristal, maybe.
What's that?
So maybe you could have got a nice glass of Cristal champagne.
Yeah, I guess I could have, but I didn't know. I tell you the truth, Joe, there's not many situations I haven't been in where I'd be uncomfortable with regarding music, but that was one.
That was one.
One for the books.
Wow. That's a great one. That's a great story.
Lenny talking about maybe he wants to write a book. He's got some notes with him and stuff, and that would be interesting. It'd be a good book, I think.
I think it would be interesting, you know, like six decades of cover band rock and roll and pretty successful bands. And I mean, most of it would be funny. I have so many funny stories that I think are hysterical when I live them again. You know, they're just hysterical. You know what bands do, especially before I got really serious about the music, especially, you know, when you're a kid. Oh, the kind of things that bands do on the road, you know, are like it's just hysterical. I don't know that I should want to say it on this microphone. Some of the things, you know.
It's not terrestrial radio. We can do it.
Yeah,
say
whatever do it
you
want.
Fuck it. Who gives a shit?
You know, if you want to do another one of these, I would be glad to do one and dedicate it to some of the funny things. Maybe we could have a couple of guys come in and talk about old war stories.
I would love to.
Wouldn't that be great?
I would love to.
Yeah, we'd all. I'm sure everybody has funny stories to tell. You know?
Yeah, that would be one for the record books.
I would like that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll save that for next time then.
Yeah,
okay.
We'll do it again for sure.
I really appreciate that you guys wanted to do this with me very much.
Like it's awesome. Lenny,
very nice of you.
You were a huge inspiration in my life as a young, you know, guitar player coming up, and you know, watching you play, and you know, inspiring me to want to continue to do it. And all these years later, finally getting to hang out with you and work with you, it's I'm blessed.
Thank you, Joe.
I'm glad we're able to have you here, and you know, get a little bit of your story out because you deserve it, man.
Sure.
As far as I'm concerned, you're a legend. You know, absolutely.
In my own mind.
No.
So, thank you, Joe, so much. I appreciate that very much, my friend.
My friend.
It was a pleasure having you here, Lenny, for sure, man. Very nice. Very nice. I liked it. I guess, well, you have your gig, you said you do your duos on Wednesdays. Where's that?
That's at the Idle Hour in Point Pleasant. It's every other Wednesday.
Okay.
We'll be playing at the Beachcomber on the 1st of March, which is a Friday night.
Okay.
We're playing at Monmouth County Racetrack at the... There's a beautiful... I guess it's a restaurant that has an outdoor facility where bands play. We'll be doing that the Sunday after Labor Day at around 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
All right, cool.
Yeah, you could go to our website, yaskers.com. No, we couldn't get the farm, Yaskers Farm. Some ice cream company owns it, but we go with yaskers.com. You can get any information you want from there.
That's great. You got an email you want to put out or anything like that? Or
a what?
An email?
Anybody wants to contact you personally?
No, I don't do it. I'm not a media guy like that.
Yaskers.com will get you there.
Yeah, I don't do any. I'm not on the computer at all. I use the computer only for Pro Tools, and that's it.
You're going to have to go on and listen to this podcast now.
I'm going to have to do that. Yeah, you're going to have to show me how to do it.
That's great. Awesome.
That was a pleasure, Lenny. I loved having you here, man. It was awesome. Definitely,
thank you.
Definitely
it was
cool.
A pleasure to be here. It was fun to talk about all this stuff.
Yeah. Definitely want to have you back, for sure.
I'm glad to have been a guy that you thought was interesting enough to do this.
Sure.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's what this is about for us, you know, just people we respect, admire, friends, you know, that are... whether they're musicians or they're engineers or, you know, they could be anybody. They could be a promoter. They could be an agent. They could be an actor. We, you know, it's just somebody that's got a story to tell, and hopefully people will want to hear it. I know they're going to want to hear this one, though.
Definitely, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I hope so.
Yeah.
This might have to be another two-parter.
Yeah, it might be.
Yeah, I don't mind.
All right, man. That was episode 3. Not too bad, huh?
No, not too shabby. That's a great one.
Woo! We did it. We did it. We did a thing, man. Yeah. This thing happened.
Yeah, boy.
It happened. We even talked about Flavor Flav.
Yeah. Ooh, how you fit that? Feel that guy would fit in with the Yaskers form.
Right?
We managed.
Till next time, keep on rocking and recording.
See ya.
Bye.